and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. Listen local.
Welcome to Catskill Characters. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Calico musician and songwriter Elizabeth Rose. Elizabeth grew up in Hollywood, Queens, which you wouldn't necessarily think would be a rural area. I mean, Queens, but it was, and she'll tell us about that, her life as an equestrian and a musician. And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the late Chip Farrelly, the wonderful photographer and musician who Elizabeth had the good fortune to know and play fantastic music with. Lots to unpack here, so here we go. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Donna. What a treat.
Well, it's a treat for me, too. And the first thing I'd like you to do, if you don't mind, is to please tell the listener about Hollywood, Queens, where you grew up. I mean, I had no idea.
For those of you who know the geography, it's where Grand Central Parkway exits at 188th Street. It was designed, I think, by somebody during the Vanderbilt days with all curved streets, so that nobody could go too fast. And this was maybe in the 1920s, maybe. When I grew up there in the 1850s, that's a joke. We had a horse stable across the street from our house. My father, my mother, my brother, and I lived in our place. And we had two lots, which means we had almost an acre in Queens. And so we got really involved with the horses. And my brother and I started riding there and doing horse shows there. It was all English equestrian. And once in a while, I would bring a horse across the street to our backyard and ride the horse up and down. I even have pictures of that. It was an exquisitely beautiful place to grow up. It was kind of quiet. And we were just about a half a mile from the entrance to Cunningham Park. And in those days, Cunningham Park and Alley Pond Park had a whole bunch of bridle paths. So we would go out with groups and with very good riders on the bridle paths, too, for trail rides that sometimes took a couple of hours. But most of the time, we rode in the ring. And we come home from school and head straight to the stable, clean up the stable, groom the horses, and saddle up and ride. And, you know, and then all weekends, that's where we were. So we just love being there with the horses.
A friend of mine was on several years ago, Leslie Abad, and she talked about, you know, getting on the horses, and she and her friends would just ride horses all over the place. It sounds like you had a very similar experience, except you were in Queens.
Yes, we were in New York City.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, I think the listener would also love to hear about your writing adventures in France and Ireland.
Well, when we travel, if I can ride a horse, I'll ride a horse. And I've had the fun of riding in Brittany. That's the north of France. And they're on the English Channel, or what they call in France, La Manche. And the tide goes out for about 6 hours. And it's just kind of soft sand. So you can go riding. You go into the part of the channel with this group of horses. It's really sweet. And you ride around there and you know the tide isn't going to come in again for hours. I can speak French and get along, but I didn't know the horse words. So I didn't understand everything. So they had to watch me ride to see if I could ride. I had a really sweet horse. They gave me their easiest horse. And then she saw I could ride, took me off that horse and put me on another horse. Then we went out, we kept going out into the channel, and then we all stopped in about less than a foot of water. Then I discovered the reason why she put me on this horse, because my horse was the one that really likes to lie down and roll in the water.
Oh, no.
So I was able, my horse went down on his knees and wanted to roll, but I knew how to pull him up. I also knew how to jump off really fast. So that was probably the highlight of my French ride. But then my girlfriend Mary and I booked a 5-day horse trek from Killarney, Ireland. This is all in County Kerry, down to Waterville, Ireland. And that was spectacular. We rode about 6 hours a day in a group, international group, and we went through bogs. We rode in the bay and all the coastal areas, and we actually went cantering and galloping through some of the waves as they broke. They're low waves. They're like rolling surf waves. But that was a wonderful trip. And since we only have a few minutes here, I think that's probably enough detail.
You know, I have to tell you, though, I'm just picturing you riding in slow motion with your hair going back in the wind, and the sand coming up around the horse's mm-hmm. legs, and the sound of the water. Oh, spectacular.
And I actually have video on my YouTube channel of us galloping on Rhine Row, which is the big beach on the last day.
Wow. So, okay, so you started your equestrian pursuits when you were in second grade. It's very young. What about music? When did that begin for you?
In the womb.
Ooh.
I got the lucky family charm of being born into a family of wonderful musicians, three of whom were very successful commercially and still are. My brother's still kicking it. My mother was a musician and an actor and a comedian. She did a lot of acting before she became a teacher. And then when she retired, we went and got her pictures taken. She got an agent immediately, and she started doing comedy on the Letterman show, which was funny. And that's also on my YouTube channel. He loved her. He had her on 4 times. She used to say 12 times because they repeated the show, but it was actually 4 times. My mother was a force of nature. And
what was her name?
Jerry Rose.
Jerry Rose. Okay.
I used to call her Jerry Attrick. But anyway, so my brother has played on a million hit records. He's a very top session player in the height of the session musician period, and started in the late 60s and went until the 80s, the later 80s. It started to die down. Anybody could buy a keyboard that would fix their playing. And at that point, it changed. But he's still a great musician. He plays great guitar player and a great, great mandolin player. Bob Rose. He was the guitar player in the original David Letterman band when David Letterman was given a daytime show. My mother used to show up in the audience all the time.
Oh, that's funny.
So, I mean, I've had music all my life. My father played cello. He was mostly audience. The rest of us were kind of entertainers. But my father played cello and he could sing. So they had madrigal groups. When I was 5, I was reading music, singing in parts and madrigals in the living room. My father had string quartets, string quintets. My brother had rock, jazz, kind of jazz bands, and then kind of rock-ish bands in the basement. He went on, became successful after college. My cousin was bass trombone player and an arranger in Alan Raff, and he was the bass trombone player in Jerry Mulligan's concert jazz band.
His father, wow.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of stuff. All the trombones on Janis Ian's At 17. He played the trombonium on that. A million sessions. He was in the NBC Orchestra too. And his father, my uncle Ted Raff, was the conductor and arranger on live TV. And I used to go to these shows. Name That Tune, Hobby Lobby, Stop the Music. That was Uncle Ted conducting. So that was great. Before that, Ted was he was a Juilliard grad, and I think he wrote the first actual written arrangements for one or both of the Dorseys. I might not have that completely straight, but they were all great musicians. Mm. They were all those men fantastic. And my mother she could play piano, but she was a quite a good singer. Opera, a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan. I was raised in all that. I was secretary of the MIT Gilbert and Sullivan Society back in the day. I did Gilbert and Sullivan every semester at MIT, and then went during college. I was at BU, but I was always doing that. And then we did an original musical. I was raised in musicals, and I had my first Broadway audition from junior high. My parents parents sent me to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts on Saturdays, and they came looking for kids for a show. So I came very close. They had us all in a line. They selected us down to three. And the big lesson out of that was, when Gower Champion asks you if you can dance, you say yes. You don't say, oh, yeah, I was a good dancer, but I didn't know how to, you know, sell myself. So,
yeah,
I didn't make it into that show. But anyway,
I think it's safe to say, if you didn't turn out to be a musician, there'd be something terribly, terribly wrong.
Yes. 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 I'm so lucky.
You are lucky. That is a real stroke of luck. And I want you to talk about your one-woman show, Relative Pitch, that you did at the Cherry Lane Theater. And it was directed by Gretchen Cryer, who I love. And she's known for many things, including the show I'm Getting My Act Together and Taking It on the Road. So please tell the listener about Relative Pitch.
Well,
you have 1 minute left. So
okay. It was a show that someone said, you should put this music on stage. And I found Gretchen, and she was teaching a class of how to create a solo show. Leslie Gore was in the class, and a lot of other really wonderful people were in her classes. Joy Behar was taking one of them at one time.
Oh, wow.
And they were great. And she helped give you writing prompts. I stuck with her for 6 years and got the show written. And then she was my mentor, and also she directed the show. So it was me and my stage manager, five guitars on stage in 70 minutes with 135 lighting cues. And it was terrific. Okay, that's the thing that tells me I'm talking too much.
No, you're not talking too much. I think you should just mention a little bit more about the lighting, because I thought that was fascinating.
Okay, so I got no problem playing music for people, sitting down playing guitar, very comfortable. When you're doing a show, you do a day of tech in the theater, and it's like 10 hours, okay? Maybe it's 10 hours. And you just, every single lighting cue, that's why they get body doubles, but for a one-woman show. And you had to be in exactly the light, the hot spot of the light for each cue. So that was really challenging to me. And then just before dress rehearsal, Angelina Fiorilisi, who owned the Cherry Lane Theater at the time, and who was great, great person. She was on Broadway and everything. She's a wonderful person. She also was a creative director. And she said, you needed to be or not to be seen in this show. And I had to go home, write that, come back, and insert it in the show just before opening. So that's pretty typical in theater. And a one-woman show is really challenging. But I did do it at the Tustin Theater before I got the opportunity at the Cherry Lane. So that was great. And I recorded the original cast album. and I still have it. Everybody's interested. It's online. And that was a great experience. And it was a good story. It was called Relative Pitch, which is kind of a thing. Like, I actually have relative pitch. It's slightly different from perfect pitch and much more livable. But it's a story of growing up in a slightly cacophonous musical family and then going off and becoming a songwriter and the ups and downs of the roads. But ultimately ending in whatever you do, do what's close to your heart, you know, and that's where your life gets really great.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fantastic. I hope that you'll bring it back.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we should take a quick break here, Elizabeth, okay? We'll come right back. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Elizabeth Rose. We'll be right back.
The Radio Catskill Music Auction is live, online. Bid on rare vinyl records, exclusive once-in-a-lifetime music performances, awesome electronics, and more. Don't miss your chance to get your hands on these incredible items and experiences. Place your bids now at WJFFradio.org. And don't forget the big annual music sale, November 30th at the Liberty Mall.
On last week's Wait, Wait, we asked Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer if she was the only sitting governor to have a rap song written about her.
That wouldn't surprise me. Have you met them? I'm going to get in trouble now.
I'm Peter Sagal. We'll try to get the stars of Somebody Somewhere, Bridget Everett and Jeff Hiller, to get themselves in hot water. That's on our intentionally provocative news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
If you've just joined us, this is Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Elizabeth Rose. In the first half of the show, Elizabeth told us about her early years growing up in Holliswood, Queens, in a very musical family, which helped to shape her life as a musician and a songwriter. But Elizabeth is not only a musician, she's an actor as well, and she grew up across the street from a stable and learned to ride at a very young age. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the music scene up here in Calico, New York, and also about Elizabeth's dear friend, the late Chip Farrelly. Let's get to it. You know, Elizabeth, it's not necessarily a common thing to find the community of musicians that you have up here.
I'll tell you something. This law of attraction stuff carries a lot of validity. If you build it, they will come. And, you know, Brewster Smith and Molly Denver bought this place next to the Callaghan Theater and turned it into Rafter's Tavern. And my husband, Don Castello, a wonderful musician, and I are very, very active in the music program. Brewster wanted to do an open mic on Sundays. He figured that would be a good thing. A trivia thing on Thursday nights. And then Fridays and Saturdays, we have live musicians. And then Sunday, we have an open mic. He was going to lead the open mic, but after he had to leave for a week, I took it over. And I guess because he had so many responsibilities, I stuck there. So 4 years I've been the host. And boy, talk about a great community. It's really amazing what's going on there. My greatest thrill is fostering other people's creativity and getting them past their fears, if they have them, of getting on stage, which is terrifying to a lot of people. And then opening their voices or picking up their guitar and doing what's coming from their heart and getting stronger and stronger. And it's been absolutely magical. And because we have a bunch of good musicians, we put, you know, instant bands together, people who can play just about anything. Some of us read, some of us don't, but some of us have really good ears. Like Laura Garone, who's a wonderful singer and fantastic. She started coming a lot more late. Well, she's come twice in the last few weeks and saying that she just loves the not only the atmosphere, but the way that she gets a good band behind her to do her two songs. And that makes me feel really good. And we have wonderful sound system. Molly and Brewster have invested in great sound equipment. My husband, Donnie, runs the sound, and he's really good at live sound. And we have indoor and outdoor systems and stages. So it's as good as it gets for an open mic situation. Every single person gets their sound set. And the back, when we're out in the back, the sound is incredible because there's a natural amphitheater with the hill right behind us. So you come over and sing sometime, Donna. We'll play for you.
Rafters is practically, the open mic is practically legendary at this point. I was wondering, is that when you first met Chip Farrelly at the open mic?
I met Chip Farrelly when my husband and I first bought a house up in Calicoon in, I think, 2011. And I started something called the Sullivan County Songwriters Circle. And we used to get together every Saturday afternoon at the Dancing Cat. And then eventually we moved it over to the conservatory at Bethel Woods. And Chip came to one of those. But then he started coming to the open mic and he became a fixture. And then we found out that he could sing. And Brewster and he and I were sitting outside in the back one dark night while some music was going on. And we started singing this song together in three-part harmony and playing. It was like magic. The blend was great. So we formed a band. Donnie came in with his baritone sax and low Irish whistle. Chip was the bass player, singer. And I said, I'd love for you to do some of your songs. And Brewster, by the way, is one of my favorite songwriters, singers, and musicians. So we had mostly his and my music. And then Chip had three songs, usually each set. He was such a romantic. He was a real good musician. He had a great feel. And he sang. And he also had a tremendous sense of humor. He was such a good laugher because, you know, I need that. I need a lot of attention. And he was funny as hell. One day he came up to us at open mic and he said, you know, these guys were all wanting me to play with them. He was like everybody's bass player, Bob Tellefson, Randy Light, and Lighten Up. And he said, I'm not taking any more gigs on Sunday. I'm just coming to open mic. And he would come set everything up, carry stuff, bring his bass amp, if you know what that's like, and just help run everything and make everybody comfortable. And when we had to all wear masks and one guy didn't want to, he was the nice guy that went over and explained why while I was getting hot in the face because I was not wearing a mask. Chip was a peacemaker. He had all the good qualities. And like I said, funny as hell. And we had wonderful harmonies with him. And we had some great grooves with him. And he was always, always willing. He wanted to do the work. He wanted to make everything work. And he always had the big picture.
Do you remember that story when Brewster was first building Rafters?
Oh, not that story. No, I thought it was a different story.
Oh, okay. Well, what story were you thinking about?
It was a story that, I don't know if you know April. She lives near Calicoon, and I think she works at the bank. Anyway, April's a sweetheart, and she had come up from New York City on the bus late one night, and the bus only went as far as Middletown. She was stuck there, and that's not a good place to be stuck at a bus station by yourself in Middletown at one or so in the morning. She called Chip, who lived in Damascus, and he jumped in his car and went down and picked her up. That's Chip.
Yeah, you know, I only met him a couple of times, but I just got such a great vibe from him, very empathetic. And he had a lot of depth to him. And the story that I was thinking about that Brewster told was that when he was building Rafters, there was a knock on the door one day, and it was this man and his son. And he didn't know this man. He didn't know who he was. And all the guy said to him was, do you need some help? And Brewster said, yeah. And it turned out it was Chip and his son, and they were there for several days. He came back helping the stranger to build what became finally Rafters. So that really says a lot about who he was.
He was an extraordinary person.
You know, you told me recently that in this part of your life, you want to be of service. And it sounds like Chip lived by that credo. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you're doing to satisfy that aim?
Well, this may sound silly or selfish, but the first thing is for me to keep moving into something that makes me feel better. It's kind of a law of attraction thing that if I take care of myself, I'm able to help serve others if I take care of myself. So it's not service and emptying myself out and becoming, you know, sick and tired. It's about being good to myself. And then whatever someone needs, for instance, creative help or creative assistance, or just somebody who has some tools to say, yes, you can do this. You can improve. You can go to another level if you just let go of your doubt and feel what your desire, what you'd love to do. Someone has been coming to me and wants to get up and do two songs at Rafters. And so that we keep that up there. We just hold that up and shine the light on it. I teach too. I teach in Calicoon and New York, also online. So there's something really so rewarding to teach people and to give them the tools and the encouragement and how to push through whatever is blocking and produce a singing voice properly where you don't harm yourself. I get a lot of older people on guitar, and what we do is we find out if there are any physical issues with arthritis or anything. And what we do is we can tune the guitar for a song so a person doesn't have to be working hard with their fingers and hurting themselves. We figure it out so that it can work. And we set the guitar up right with the strings that are soft enough that a person can actually make music and sing and not be hurting themselves either with their hands or with their voices. So that's all really good. And I think because I came from a family of top musicians, to get to that point, you have to be very critical of yourself and of others, and you have to have ambition, and you have to know where you want to be. I was the youngest, and I was the only female other than my mother. So I knew what it felt like to be told kind of directly, you really want to be good at this, you got to step up to it. And that I'm very grateful for, because I finally did learn how to hunker down, and I found that I love practicing.
Sorry. Thank you so much for coming on with me today. I'm going to take us out with one of Chip's compositions called Where I Am. And I really appreciate you sharing so much of yourself and your memories of Chip as well. Thank you
so much, Donna.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30 on Radio Catskill. Be sure to join us then for more stories of fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. Here's Chip Farrelly singing Where I Am.
I've told the story before. It's a true story, and I'm going to tell it again. Saw her on the subway, pink pants and blonde hair in a world of gray. She moved over for me, thought I was in a movie. How'd I pick that train that summer day? So many years later, my hand still settles in hers. The years we spent together makes it so much clearer. No need, no need to look any further. I know, want to be where I am.
I am,
want to be where I am. Her needlepoint designs, I said, well, gee, yeah, just fine. But my mind was on something 2 feet away. Her knee pressed up against mine, I said, well, gee, ain't that fine. A dizzy, dreamy feeling simply swept me away. So many years later, my mind still settles on hers. The years we've spent together makes it so much clearer. No need,
no need
to look any further. I know,
I know.
Want to be where I am. I am.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb from The Splendid Table. Join us for Turkey Confidential, our annual culinary triage show for the day you need it most, Thanksgiving. We take your calls and get help from amazing friends. That's Turkey Confidential on Thanksgiving Day from 8 p.m.
Thanksgiving morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Jackson C. Frank was a 60s singer and songwriter from Buffalo, New York, with a very small number of releases to his name, but now with a big reputation. On the next Wagonload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing Sandy Denny and many more covering the songs of Jackson C. Frank. So, please join me for the Wagonload of Monkeys on Sunday afternoon at 3.
listen to Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10. The best of rural life and agriculture for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. That's Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill.